Shalom and welcome again to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I am your host, Rabbi Richard Address. In these podcasts, we hope to explore some of the issues that touch on our families, our communities, and ourselves as a result of the revolution in longevity. And you can contact us via our homepage, jewishsacredaging.com, or via our Facebook page, Jewish Sacred Aging on Facebook. And we welcome your comments either on the voicemail icon or on the website or to me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And it gives us great pleasure to welcome to today's podcast of Seekers of Meaning, Rachel Beck, author of an upcoming book called Finding Your Way. Rachel, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. And you're in Kansas City, I think, right?
Yes, I'm very close to the Iowa border.
Real. Well, welcome. Nice to have you join us here. And this is very exciting. Finding Your Way, the subtitle of this book is When Life Changes Your Plans, a memoir of adoption, loss of motherhood, and rediscovering home. That's quite a lot here. So let's go right into it. What's the theme of this book, Rachel, and why did you write it?
The theme of the book is trying to find your way when you have expectations of what your life is going to be, and then how that doesn't necessarily pan out, and then how you have to recreate yourself. And that was kind of my experience for my life. I had my life laid out a certain way. It didn't go that way. So I just had a shift on many different levels.
The author of this book is V. Lakshmi. And here you are as Rachel Beck. What's going on here?
Okay, I picked the pen name V. Lakshmi because that was my Indian name. And I wanted to honor where I came from.
So talk to me about that, where you came from and where you are. Your journey really, and going through and having a conversation with you a little bit before we went on the podcast and looking at some of the publicity for the book, the genesis and the really the your personal journey from India to suburban United States of America, etc. That's really what's going on here, isn't it?
That's a big part of it. I was born in Tamil Nadu, which is southern India, in a very small area. My birth mother died 2 days after giving birth. And there was a man who we haven't been able to verify if he was my biological father or not that took care of me for a couple months. He was unable to provide milk and food. I was a really sick baby. And I was taken to the home of the founder of an orphanage, Dr. Pauline King, and she took care of me.
And your journey, I mean, in some of the publicity and some of the stuff you write that you were adopted from India by a white Jewish family. Talk to me about that.
Well, this is interesting. So my parents have two biological sons, and they wanted to have a third child, and they felt that there was a lot of children in the world who needed a home. And they found out about me on the same day from two different people. And they started the journey, and I was flown over and landed at JFK in the 1970s.
How old were you when you came to the States?
I was 11 months old.
Wow. And you found your way to Philly, right?
Yes. And so I was in Jersey, and it was in New Jersey that I was converted to Judaism. And then we ended up moving outside Philadelphia, and that's where I remained. I went to Zalman Schachter Day School, and that's where I remained for most of my schooling up till I was 18 years old.
So can you talk to me a little bit about that journey? Because one of the things I intuit about the writing of the book and your journey, especially at this time of history in the United States, is this also a kind of a look at the social divisions that seem to be so powerful and rampant in the country today? Is this sort of like a reminder that inclusion and diversity and community and family and love really are more important than the divisions.
I 100% agree with you. When I wrote the book, you know, this was a year ago. It was before a lot of things started unfolding. But as I started researching more and learning more, I was trying to build my strength to tell the stories of the things that have happened to me because I'm Indian, because I'm a woman, and because I'm Jewish. And I'm feeling now that with watching what's going on, it's building my strength a little bit more. It's empowering me a little more that it's okay now to share this story. I'm getting strength from the people in front of me.
What do you mean getting strength from the people in front of you? What does that mean?
Meaning like people who are telling their stories.
Uh-huh.
It's giving me strength to tell my story. That I feel like there's a lot more acceptance going on right now. And so it's giving me courage.
Is it really this, you combine these three things, being Indian, being a woman, and being Jewish. It's a heck of a trifecta. What's been the greatest challenge to you now? You're an adult, you're a professional, you're a very accomplished photographer. You exhibit, you know, with your photography. What's been that greatest challenge that you're facing or continue to face?
I think honestly, it's learning to build courage within myself and to understand that when someone tells me no, that I can keep moving forward. And that's something that has been instilled by my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. To keep going. So when someone has shut the door on me in the beginning of both my careers, instead of giving up completely, I kept trying to knock on the door because of the examples I've seen between my mom, my dad, my grandparents, and my aunt and uncle.
You're still in touch with your parents?
Very much so. Very, very much so. I'm very close with them.
And how you just alluded to it. What's been the source of that strength with you with them? How can you just elaborate on that a little bit? You basically said that they're almost have been this rock, this support ongoing. How have they done that?
On so many levels. They emotionally have supported all of my journey. When it comes to me searching for my biological family members, mm-hmm. they have been behind me every step of the way. Which has been, I've only connected with a couple biological family members, and that's like six or seven generation behind. But there's never been a time when they said, don't do this. They're like, go do this. You can mm-hmm. do this. You have our support. And for someone who, that's huge. Or anything, I'm like, hey, I think I'm going to try this out. They're like, go for it.
You write, and in some of the publicity, pre-publicity for the book, and again, the book is Finding Your Way When Life Changes Your Plans, subtitled A Memoir of Adoption, Loss of Motherhood, and Rediscovering Home. And let's jump to this right away. This book is coming out, due out when?
It's due out by December 31st.
So this calendar year, and it'll be available, I would imagine, bookstores, and Amazon and the usual places, correct?
Yes, it's going to be launched on Amazon.
Okay. You write in some of this pre-publicity work about the concept of courageous renaissance. What is that?
I think a big part of that is my whole life I had dreamt about being a mother, and it's something that I thought like, it would just happen. You got married, you were going to have kids, and that's the way I thought it was going to be. And it turned out not to be that way because my body can't have children. So that was a huge step in me recreating myself. I also thought it was going to be a biological connection for me that I had been longing for my whole life, to have somebody who looked like me, and I had never seen that. So when I found out that it wasn't going to be possible, I had to start all over again.
And you did what?
I had to come to accept it. I had to let go that it was something my body wasn't going to be able to do. You know, we were pregnant and lost a child. And it didn't work after that through treatments we had undergone. And it was just learning that I had to let it go. It was letting go a huge dream. And I had a lot of healing moments when I went to India and was able to just let it go and realize that my life is going to go another way. And part of it is supporting and helping the kids at the orphanage and any children.
So you mentioned that the proceeds from the book are going to go to a Family Village Farm Global Ministries. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm donating part of the proceeds of the book to Family Village Farm. Yes.
So you just said when you went back to India, that was, if I can use the phrase, was that a healing for you, an acceptance? You said it's a letting go. Could you describe that?
Sure. In a lot of ways, when I finally touched down the first time I landed there, it was like home. It was another part of my home. Like America is my home and India is my home. So to be there for the first time, something that I had dreamt about my whole life, and then to go to the town where I came from, it was like, okay, I was here for 11 months, but this was 11 months was a huge part of my journey. I went to the hospital where I was at. I stay at the Family Village Farm while I'm there. Another part was being a majority for the first time in my life.
Talk to me about that. I mean, you know, people, you know, just, I imagine it triggered all. Can you recall what that feeling was like?
It was surreal. I guess that's the best way to say it. I had, after 24 hours on the plane, you know, you're jet lagged and you're, you know, but I remember walking around the first day and people weren't staring at me. They weren't looking at me because I was different. It was just like, wow, look at this. And some people, it was nice for me to connect with because there were similar features. Even though there wasn't the genetic component, there was a heritage component.
What do you say? Because I mean, you talk about, you know, the loss of pregnancy and the issue of infertility, which is a fairly significant statistical reality within the contemporary American Jewish community for a variety of reasons. And I'm sure you've dealt with other couples, and certainly when you go out on the book tour, I guarantee it will come up. What do you say to those couples or individuals who are dealing with exactly what you've then had to let go and maybe can't let go or want to let go, but finding they can't? What advice could you possibly give to these people?
You know, I've been thinking a lot about this. The best advice I can give, because everybody's, you know, journey is obviously different from what my husband and I have been through, is that I feel that my husband and I are a family. And it hurts me when people say that we're not, you know, because we don't have children. So I think reshaping our family identity was something that I needed to do. We're a family. You know, it doesn't make a difference if, you know, we're children or not children, but he's my family. And that's something that you have to change. I've also learned that I can't change people's opinions of me, of not being a mom, and we really don't share our story unless you know us on a deeper level. And I feel that, like, not, I've been judged a lot for not being a mother.
Really?
A lot, yes.
Even in today's so-called enlightened society?
It comes up a lot.
Really?
Yes. How could you pick your career over not being a mom? You know, I don't understand it. Why aren't you providing children to your husband? How could you do that? It's very, and I share some of this in the book. So I've learned that, okay, and people are welcome to their opinions. It's how they speak to me about it. But the best thing that I could tell couples that have gone through this is just to remember that they're a family. And I wish society would have more compassion. That would be the most beautiful thing in the world for couples who are going through infertility.
The book is said to be in some of the pre-publication write-ups a love story, and you alluded to this a lot. Could you just elaborate on this? How is finding your way a love story?
It's a love story about me and my husband and the things we've been through, about lifting each other up. It's a love story about my family. My family in India, my family here, the courage and strength I've gotten from incredible, friendships that I have. It's acknowledging the people in my life. I wouldn't say it's a romantic love story. It's my way of saying, thank you. I'm standing here today and you picked me up because of your love is why I'm here. Friends, family, people who have been very supportive.
How important or what role has your Judaism played in all this?
Judaism was a huge part of my life. My parents are more religious than I am. I was very involved, there was Shabbat, Passover, Hanukkah. We went to synagogue. I was bat mitzvahed. I spent a summer in Israel doing a teen tour, working on a kibbutz. And it wasn't until a couple years ago I had a shift in my thinking about Judaism. I had to start reshifting my thinking, and now I'm coming back to it in a lot of ways. I was asked to leave a synagogue based on the color of my skin, and it was extremely painful and hurtful, and that happened. It happened many years ago, but it took me 5 years to step back into synagogue. And since that experience, I had to I worked with a wonderful rabbi who taught me that one person doesn't represent your entire religion and remember where you came from. And I ended up going into his synagogue and started healing. And this whole book has been very healing with me with Judaism. Been very grateful that the Jewish community has been supporting it, but it took me some time.
No, I'm in this day, and I actually am working as I do all the time in synagogues all over. I'm actually kind of surprised at that, but I shouldn't be.
It was right after, it was the first Rosh Hashanah after September 11th. The climate of the U.S. was different. And I think I think more of the hurt was not just the person who had done it, because he said, you look like one of them. I was hurt by the line of people that was standing in line with the Rosh Hashanah tickets that stood there and did nothing. And that to me was that was more painful. And I had gotten there earlier before my whole family came. So they got there and they dealt with the situation. But I have a hard time with the whole bystander effect. I mean, I really believe if you see something, please say something.
Hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's a lesson for the community. Has the Kansas City area, because I know a little bit about it, reached out? Have they been welcoming to you? Are you involved in the community at all, the Jewish community?
I went to a synagogue a couple years ago, but when I do go, it was a very welcoming. That was the rabbi actually who got me to go back into synagogue, who has actually moved to, I think, upstate New York now. He was the one who worked. I was volunteering with him to do photos of his day camp, and he called me and said, Rachela, come for Rosh Hashanah, give it a chance. And I felt very comfortable with him, and I knew that if I was going to step back into synagogue, this would be the place. So it was here that I was able to, because of his guidance and saying, come, you're welcome. So that was huge. That was very, very huge.
You know, you're a very accomplished photographer. And the website, in this case, you have your own website, correct, for your work?
I do. It's rachelbeckphotos.com.
One continuous Rachel Beck Photos, lowercase, doesn't make any difference?
It's all lowercase, one word.
Okay. So, in thinking about this and looking at some of the material for the book. Is there some way that your photography mirrors your journey? Is there a reflection? I wouldn't be surprised. Is there some sort of a connection between how you approach your profession, what you take and how you take pictures, and your own personal journey?
Absolutely. One of the things that I was taught in my family is to give back, to be a charitable person. We did tzedakah from the time I was like 3 years old up. So when I started doing the photography business about 9 years ago, I reached out to organizations and connected with organizations where I could volunteer. So I volunteered with United Cerebral Palsy, American Diabetes Association, the Humane Society, for organizations that need the photography but might not necessarily, you know, have the budgeting for it. So I go in, take the photos for them because I want to support them, and then they can use the photos. So it's given me the chance to give back to the community.
Can a photograph change people's minds?
I think so. I think it can be very empowering. I think it brings to light the things that are going on in the world. I'm not a typical photographer where I'm more about telling a story when I take a photo. And some of the things I've taken photographs of are hard and difficult. It usually takes me a couple of days to process it. Mm-hmm. But if I can take my love of art and turn that into passion to helping people, then that's definitely what I want to do.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of, just as you're speaking, I'm just thinking of a couple of photographs from just our life. You know, the Kennedy funeral photograph, you know, some of the 9/11 photographs, obviously, the assassination photographs from 68, it was before you were born, but, even
and
some
I
of
learn.
The, you know, it, they're one image, just can change a person's mind. You know, you look at it, they do tell a story in ways that, you know, it's an art. I mean, what you do is an art. It's art. It's really great art.
It changes me too.
In what way?
You know, I had this most incredible experience. I was going with somebody around India. And one of the things I do is when I take, I don't believe I'm taking from India. So like when I take a photo of somebody or their families, I like to like donate to them to like feed their families. So someone was touring me through, I went to visit a leper colony. And I was touring around and I was giving a donation to the leper colony for them. And I met this woman who was sitting Indian style, gorgeous. And she had the most beautiful smile I've ever seen in my life. And I'm not exaggerating. And I had a translator and I always ask, can I please take your photo? So the director of the place said, yes, she said, it's okay. So I bent down, I took the photo because she was on the ground. She was just smiling. And I said to the woman, I said, could you please explain her happiness? I said, it's hard for me to understand because she has leprosy. And she said, Rachel, she's blind, she's deaf, and she has leprosy. And I looked at her and I said, I'm trying to understand her happiness. And she said, Rachel, she was wandering the streets and we took her in and we saved her. And she's very, very grateful for that. And right there in the middle of the most remote area, I found my lesson of gratitude, of how to keep giving back. And that woman is one of the women that I photographed that has changed my life forever.
Gratitude is a very big part of your life, isn't it, Rachel?
Huge. Huge. It's a huge reason for why I believe that I'm living.
So the sense of giving back and paying it forward to, you know, that cliche. But that seems to be part of what you're about as a human being. Do you think that writing this book, you alluded to the fact that it is therapeutic, cathartic, but also in writing the book, it's a lesson, isn't it? Or you're giving back to people who in some way, shape, or form, it would appear to me, have walked part of the journey that you have walked.
Absolutely. And I wanted people to have gone through some of the experiences that I've gone through to know that they're not alone. And I wanted to just make sure that the things that I've encountered, whether just all of it, infertility, the racist issues, women, you know, people not understanding that I can do things as a woman. I didn't want people to feel alone. I battled endometriosis for 20 years. I wanted to give a voice to that community and to inspire people. I'm really hoping that's what it accomplishes.
Do you feel a need even more in the current political environment, which again seems to be so siloed, divided, and cautionary?
I do. I think in a lot of ways, you know that Yiddish expression, I hope I'm saying it right, Beshet, am I saying that right?
Beshert.
Yeah. Meant to be, right? I didn't know, you know, when I wrote this, what was going to be going on. You know, I had no idea. But I think in a lot of ways, things happen for a reason. And I feel that the timing of the book is coming around the same time of what's going on. So either something was guiding me that way.
How often do you get back to India?
Every couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And are you involved with the community in Kansas City, the Kansas City area, Indian community?
I actually have some very good friends who are Indian, very, very close. Mm-hmm. Here. Yeah.
Good.
It's been a real sisterhood connection.
So we've been speaking with Rachel Beck, author of Finding Your Way When Life Changes Your Plan, subtitled A Memoir of Adoption, Loss of Motherhood, and Rediscovering Home. When Life Changes Your Plan. You know, I'm sure somebody has told you there's a Yiddish expression, where a man plans and God laughs, which is exactly the Yiddish version of the subtitle of your book, because it's like when you started out, I had everything planned out. And then as many of us have experienced, we have all these grandiose plans. And for some reason, life tapped us on the shoulder and says, not so fast. We're going to go this way right now. So just buckle your safety belt and enjoy the ride, and so to speak. But anyway, the pen name author, V. Lakshmi, LAKSHMI. The piece of paper you sent me with the photograph on the cover, that's going to be the cover?
And that is going to be the cover of the book.
It's a great cover. It's a great
thank
cover.
Thank you very much.
And so, okay.
I'm happy to say my husband took the photo.
Really? Is your husband a photographer? Is your husband a photographer?
He's not, but I knew that I would feel comfortable.
That's cool. Very cool. So the book is going to be released by the end of 2018, and it'll be available at the usual places, and of course on the great God, Amazon. And you can look for it again, Finding Your Way When Life Changes, A Memoir of Adoption, Loss of Motherhood, and Rediscovering Home. Rachel, thank you very, very much for joining us. And I wish you continued good luck and success. And hopefully if you get down this way back home to the Philadelphia area, maybe we'll get, you know, look us up and maybe just have a cup of coffee. We want to find out how this journey is continuing. So wish you just happiness. And if people want to touch base with you on the photography, what's the website again? Rachel, give it to me again.
www.rachelbeckphotos.com. And then the book website is www.vlakshmiauthor.com.
Rachel, thank you very much. And again, continued success, good health, travel safe, and we'll hopefully speak to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank all of you for joining us on today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And a reminder that we welcome comments and contact at our homepage, jewishsacredaging.com, or to me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. Seekers of Meaning is produced by Steve Lebeckin and recorded at the studios of Lebeckin Global Media here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And thank you again for joining us, and we look forward to greeting you on the next Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Thank you and shalom.